Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information on this, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells.
In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Nate Boucher. Will be sharing his story of disability life. So tell me a little bit about your experiences on dialysis and as a patient.
Right. So I suppose a good place to start is when I started on dialysis. I would say the first 6 months were as close to hell as I've ever felt. It was very painful, physically, mentally, all that. And it's pretty common for dialysis patients to have a crisis period where the body has to get used to the treatments. And I went through that to a pretty harsh degree. But after all the tough stuff was in the past for me, I got to this point where I had to basically make that decision, to move forwards or to stay where I was. Basically like a sink or swim situation. No. So basically just I ended up doing really well. And, you know, slowly but surely just kind of like pushed my limits, and that eventually led, you know, as you may have, may or may not have heard about, I ended up running that Detroit Free Press full marathon, and that was kind of like the culmination of some hard work that I put in.
So when it comes to dialysis and the treatments, aside from the marathon, what was it that got you out of that frame of mind of being... struggling with a new situation,
mm-hmm.
the depression that naturally comes with something like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I had a bit of a leg up, not that it was easier with disadvantage. It was simply something to encourage me to make the right choices. So my father lived with kidney disease my whole life, and he spent well over a decade doing dialysis, and he enjoyed two kidney transplants over my lifetime. And but he kind of got into the mindset that is so commonly shared among dialysis patients. It's a really huge mental health crisis in this way, where patients believe that they can't do much of anything because they're sick, they're unable. And that's what happened to my dad. He never worked again after a certain, like when I was very young, kidneys failed for the second time, and he never worked again. And he ended up eventually, you know, on antidepressants, with which, by the way, I support the use of antidepressants if you're clinically depressed. But in the case of my father, he just had a horrible life, you know, and aside from his kids and his family. So having that experience with him allowed me to see just how bad it can get if you just give up. And so I decided I had the choice between giving up and having something like that happen, not being able to afford a loaf of bread sometimes, not being able to pay the rent or support your kids very well, or suffering through doing the best you can regardless, in spite of your challenge. And I wasn't sure what was on the other side of that. I just thought it might be better. So that is where I got my motivation to try to, as far as the marathon, Cam, I decided about 4 years in that I had very few limitations, and I wanted to share that because I saw a big crisis with my peers, other patients, an issue with mental health, giving up, getting down on ourselves, and really having a tough life on treatment, and I felt it didn't quite need to be so awful. So kind of sort of in honor of my father, I felt I would try to do as good as I can to show that it's possible.
How did you see the community respond? I mean, your peers who saw these limitations being defied.
Oh, man, you know, that's a great question. It was so beautiful. I had quite a few. So I had, even right from the start, so I ended up making the news. Windsor Star featured me on the front page. It was really cool. And, of course, online, too. And basically, they just interviewed me and took a couple pictures. And they had found out that I was planning to run the marathon and my reasons for doing so. And so after I made the paper, you know, the age demographic at dialysis, 50% of patients are 70 years old or older. So a large demographic. So, you know, they get the paper at their house and stuff. And people were really warmed by it, really inspired by it. And then when I actually ran the marathon, there was another article that came out from Runner's World, and they shared my story. And I had patients coming up to me, 60 plus, 70 plus in age, saying that I inspired them to start working out again. Or I had another patient tell me that they were spending more time with their kids at the park just because they felt as though it could be harmful to their body to be walking around being in the heat. And they decided, what the heck? You know, if he can do that, I can do this. A good friend of mine who does treatment with me or did treatment with me, he's still there. You know, he quit smoking. And I'm not taking all the credit, but he told me, and this is one of the most warming things because we're peers, you know, he's about my age. And he looked me in the eye at dialysis. He was leaving and I was on the machine still. He came to me and he said, "You inspired me," and his words. And so, you know, one person's act can make a difference in a lot of people's lives. And it was really moving. It was really moving. I made a lot of close friends while I was there.
So what message would you send to the community about challenging the myths and stereotypes that come with kidney disease?
Well, I think a good place to start is that, you know, everybody, not just dialysis patients, but everybody who comes to live in the world have adversity. We all have a cross to bear. And it is better to face your adversity forthrightly and to do the best you can with what you got than to become victimized and lay down and be defeated by your adversity. It's just to swim and to try your best to persevere is much better. It's the better option. And I feel that way truly on a personal level, experiencing sort of how my father went through it and how I'm going through it and just seeing polarities. And I've had that privilege to witness both sides. I really do think it's better to do your best and not be defined.
So what else would you like to add?
Yeah, so I sat down and I started to think, you know, a lot of these people on dialysis, a lot of my peers, they don't really have the supports that they need and they're not really sure what they're capable of. And so I thought there's a need for some sort of not-for-profit or support system. And so in the next couple of years, the hope is to do a launch in 2021, next year, in the spring, to start a not-for-profit of my own with the support of Nikki Hillis, who is the owner of Breathe Pilates and Fitness Studio and was a past dialysis nurse who is extremely passionate about the patient positivity perspective that we're both going to share for FullTX. FullTX being the name of the not-for-profit, and so we're really hoping to just creatively storm ways to support patients and working towards a better life, having the supports they need to earn a better life. So big shout out to Nikki, and I believe we're going to do something really valuable that can help patients.
Thank you very much. I'd thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely. Thank you.
In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Trent Fairbrother, who will be telling us a little bit about his experiences with blind sports. So tell me a little bit about your experiences with blind sports.
I myself am visually impaired. I was born with a visual impairment. I played goalball competitively for several years, and I was a member of the men's national team in the 3 Paralympic Games. When I retired from goalball in 2009, I took on coaching, where I'm currently the women's national team head coach.
So, for those who might not be as familiar with the sport of goalball, can you take me through a little of that?
Sure. Goalball was invented in 1946 by an Austrian and a German, and it was brought about as a post-World War II rehab for individuals that were blinded in the war. And it has progressed over the years, where it was in the first Olympiad for the Disabled or the Paralympic Games in 1976 in Toronto. And it's played on a court the size of a volleyball court, and you have 3 players on the court at one time for each team. And the object of the game is to throw a ball slightly bigger than a basketball. It has bells inside it, and all the players are blindfolded. And the object is to throw a pass to opposing team. And on the men's side, the ball will go upwards of 70-plus kilometers, and the women are throwing about 60-plus kilometers an hour. So it's not a game for the faint of heart.
Sort of sounds like it bears a resemblance to lacrosse there.
They throw the ball. They don't kick it. They throw it. They can throw it in a bowling style, or most of the players internationally now throw it with a discus spin style.
So, in terms of blind sports themselves, how do you go about reaching out to potential players and sponsors for the leagues?
Yeah, this is one of our biggest challenges in Canada, trying to find the visually impaired individuals. We get a lot of our athletes through the school systems, through vision teachers. But that is our biggest challenge, is finding the athletes. CNIB also has assisted in this matter by putting information in their newsletters for us as well. So
in that sense, I'm assuming it's all done in an accessible format to make sure that...
Yes, it's all done. With technology nowadays, people are able to access it with their mobile devices, their iPads, their computers. They use Zoom over, or they use other technology to do it, but as well, things can be sent out in audio format as well.
So, in your time playing goalball and serving as a coach, what's been the greatest experience you've had?
As a player, competing in 3 Paralympics was a great experience. There's several of the coaches in the country now that have been international or national international players, and they've sort of carried on with the coaching because they love the sport. So just seeing the younger players coming up and succeeding is worth it for us.
So do you find there's enough recognition of the sport of goalball?
I don't think there's enough recognition currently around the world. There's a lot of countries that are playing it. There's probably 60-plus countries that are playing goalball. It's very popular, the Paralympic Games. In Rio in 2016, we had upwards of 10,000 people at every game. So, I mean, at the Paralympic Games, it's very well recognized. But in Canada, it's hard for us to get the publicity that we would like to get.
So if you could have anything added to the sport in terms of awareness and availability, what would it be?
Just getting the recognition out there and getting people to sort of look up the sport, whether it be on YouTube or on our social media platforms, Canadian Men's Goalball, Canadian Women's Goalball on Facebook, just getting it more recognized out there.
If you could send any message to the community about the sport itself and why it's still a great game, even though it's not getting as much awareness as it probably deserves, what would you say about the sport?
I think that anybody who's seen the sport falls in love with it. As it is not for the faint of heart. If you've ever played it, you'll realize that it's a very physical game in terms of the ball contact. And it's a very challenging sport to play. So, I mean, anybody who's ever played it or seen it is quite impressed with it, and they become a fan of it. Just getting the people out there to see it.
So can you tell me a little bit about the training that goes into teaching a player about the sport?
Yeah, we have provincial teams and national teams, and at each provincial level, the athletes practice with their teams. All the athletes in the national team pools have training programs that they complete on a weekly basis, daily and weekly basis. So there is a lot of training that goes into being on a national team.
So you mentioned about the ball. Is there any other modified equipment that goes into the sport?
No, the court is a volleyball court size, and there are lines on the floor that are raised. So imagine a shoestring with tape over it so that it's tactile for the player's feet and for their hands. And there's a net at each end, which is 9 meters wide and 4.5 feet high, which they can use to orientate themselves on the court as well. They just would wear the basic elbow pads, knee pads, hip pads, and then everybody has special eye shades that block out all light to make it fair, because you got people with differing levels of vision. So people can have up to 10% vision, or some people are totally blind, so they use the blacked out goggles to level the playing field.
So I'm guessing in this time of the pandemic and everything, there hasn't been as much opportunity to actually participate in the sport.
No, our last competition that we went to for the women's team was in Vancouver, and it was March 15th to 17th, and that was our last competition because the COVID thing hit the following week. And since then, we've been keeping in close contact with the team, and they've been doing workouts virtually with themselves and with the rest of their teammates. We've got a strength and conditioning coach as well that is keeping tabs on their training programs right now, and our plan is hopefully to get back in the gym with a training camp in October.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yep, thank you.
Of course.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Every week, CJM compiles top 30 and specialty charts with the most played new music at the station. Find our charts in the new section at cjm.ca or at earshot-online.com. Thursdays at 5 p.m., tune in to the Top 12 Countdown for an overview of the overall charting albums. We are breaking new ground in sound and keeping Windsor Detroit Radio in a constant state of redefinition. CJM 99.1 FM.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information on this, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from goalball coach Trent Fairbrother, dialysis patient, marathon runner Nate Boucher.
In this segment of our show, we'll be chatting with Donna Jodhan from Barrier Free Canada. So tell me a little bit about Barrier Free Canada.
Barrier Free Canada was formed in late 2014 because we felt that it was the right time to start lobbying the government to enact legislation for an accessible Canada. It was the time just before the 2015 elections, and we felt that it would be a good time to, you know, lobby for this type of cause. We are a nonpartisan grassroots organization. We are a cross disabilities organization. We are a national organization. We have over 500 requesters. What I mean by that we send out quarterly newsletters to over 500 requesters. We have almost 400 what we call YES supporters who signed up to be YES supporters for an Accessible Canada. We have over 1,000 Facebook followers and over almost 3,000 Twitter followers. I'm not sure what else I can tell you except that right now we are in the midst of revamping, but in the midst of enhancing the Barrier Free Canada board to include more voices from persons who are of various disabilities, which would include invisible disabilities.
So, what are some of the common barriers that you're working to get legislation to correct in the disability community?
Well, right now, our mission is to ensure that one of the biggest barriers we find is that persons with disabilities don't have a level playing field when it comes to having their voices heard. You know, it's fine for them to say, we can't do this, we can't do that, we don't do this, we don't do that. But they need to be heard by the right type of people, by people in the federal government. So that is one of the big invisible barriers that we are facing right now, is how best to get the voices of persons with disabilities, not just to be heard by the federal government, but to round tables where their voices can also be heard. And that is one of the biggest barriers that we are working towards.
So, to look at the converse side of things, in your time with the organization, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
I think the success story that stands out for Barrier Free Canada is the fact that we were instrumental in kickstarting the campaign for an Accessible Canada, and it was passed last year. I think that is the biggest success story for Barrier Free Canada thus far.
So, have you found that the Accessible Canada Act has been used in the way that you were hoping?
Say that again, I'm sorry?
So, with the Accessible Canada Act enacted, has it been used in the way that you intended? Getting it created is one thing, but seeing it put into practice is something else.
I think it is much too early to make a judgment on that. It was passed 1 year ago, and given the COVID situation that developed in February, March, I don't think it would be a fair judgment to say that, you know, has it done what it's supposed to do? I think there's still a lot of work to be done. And I think that work is being done slowly but surely. So I don't think it would be fair for me to say that has it done what it was set out to do. I think it's too early, much, much too early to say that.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need to get people with disabilities' voices heard, what would you say?
I would say to them, please, speak up, speak out. Make your message very clear. Make it professional. Don't complain. Give solutions. Let's work together to collaborate instead of, you know, like complaining doesn't do any good. It has to be constructive. It has to be clear. And I would advise all community members to do that, and not just community members, but also friends and associates of those persons who are disabled to do that. And this is what Barrier Free Canada is all about, is what I call giving the man on the street or the person on the street the opportunity to speak up and speak out.
So, do you work in partnership with any other organizations?
We are part of other organizations. organizations, other groups. We are part of other groups, and that's how we form our partnerships. But I would say that our partnerships are with individuals, you know, individuals who want to be part of Berry Free Canada. Like, we have a group called BFC Advocating for Change. This is where we give people the opportunity to speak up and speak out. But we are part of several other groups, yes.
So, what are the next steps going forward?
We are waiting to see what the federal government is going to be doing as far as rolling out of different initiatives. We wait to see what they are going to be doing so that we can decide how are we going to be part of this and what can we do to make a valuable contribution. But in the meantime, I think right now the focus mainly is on COVID, and our main concern, but our main mission right now, is to encourage people to talk about the challenges and concerns they're presently facing with regard to COVID, and how best we can make those concerns and challenges heard by the federal government.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you.
Policies, athletics, academics, employment. It's all about challenging the notions of what's possible for people with disabilities to look at the creative ways in which they can get things done in society and to find the appropriate partnerships for those willing to stand beside them. Fact is, all of today's interviews were a reminder that things aren't necessarily impossible just because they may appear that way at the start. Sports like goalball really are amazing to me. This is something that people with vision impairments have that is essentially their own. Something they created because they wanted to participate in sport, not to be looked upon as someone with a limitation, but as someone great athletic ability. As for Nate's story, I'm just floored by the fact that he would get out there and do what many of us would have a hard time doing without any sort of disability. But he did it. Really, it sets a precedent. It opens the door for those who want to take the next step in their own journey. Fact is, everyone with a disability or without has hopes, dreams, and goals all their own. And we have a simple choice: to accept the glass ceiling mentality when someone says, this can't be done, or to take it upon ourselves to try to prove it can be done, to try to create something, not just for ourselves, but that the world can look upon and see that it's not so narrow a definition of possibility as we might like to consider. To see someone succeeding. Fact is, in this world, everyone loves a story of somebody just rising to the occasion. I mean, we always hear about the person who did it first, but it matters every single time, because at some point, someone had to say, I want to do this. I want to find a way to make the world adaptable. I want to find a way just to conquer this for myself. Those who come after might have a bit of an easier time with that. Same is true of policies. The Accessible Canada Act, we're seeing really the potential for some great work to be done. We must not leave it as simply potential. It must be there to ensure rights are respected, policies are worked upon. The truth is, there is always potential, but it's up to the individual to realize it. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.